Welcome to AVXL Episode 10, recorded March 8th, 2016. We have a release date, people. We have a release date. AVXL is made possible by your support. If we're helping to make your home theater more amazing, do us a favor. Head on over to patreon.com/AVXL and support the show.
Yeah.
Perfect. Welcome to AVXL, your guide to the best in home theater gear and content, no matter what your budget is. I'm Patrick Norton.
Hey, and I'm Robert Herron.
I am deep in the weeds on speakers and amps and music and digital to analog converters and figuring out a better place to listen to stereo speakers.
Well, I had the pleasure of sampling your setup as it currently sits here with the BMW DM601s, your AmpCamp amps. I didn't know you had two of these.
Yeah, they're monoblocks.
Oh, okay. So one per channel.
One per channel.
It did sound pretty fantastic. Anytime I can listen to The Man in Black... Talk a little bit about shenanigans.
Did you feel the presence? Did you feel the sound stage?
Was that the prison?
That was one of the prison records. I think it was San Quentin.
But it's funny. It sounded like I was there.
Perfect. Well. That's what I was going for. And it's funny. These are little tiny 601s. They're a beautiful, wonderful speaker.
I don't think they make them anymore, though. I was trying to find them the other day, and they're on like the archived product pages of...
I think they're up to...
They might be. I'm sure they have something. A replacement model. I didn't mean for you to go product hunting right now, but...
It's what I do. Well, there was the 601, and then the 602, the 603 were the sizes. I think they're at Series 3. The 601 Series 3. Wait a minute. Here we go. It would be helpful if I went to the B&W website. It's tough. I would say, you know, if you're looking for small, amazing speakers, I'm waiting to hear that they have a release date. Not on the ELAC US site, but on the primary ELAC site, you can pre-order the UB5 speakers that I heard at CES 2016. I really want to compare them side by side with Kef's LS50, which is one of the most extraordinary speakers I've ever heard. And I want to get a pair of Kef so I can compare them to these B&W 601s, which are the speakers I bought when my long-suffering Paradigms, my first new-to-me adult speakers that hadn't been trashed or bought from a homeless guy on the streets of New York City, which I got a pair of fantastic vintage Ohm speakers, which I later lit on fire due to an amplifier incident.
Fire!
I was obsessed with overpowered amplifiers, and I bought cheap amplifiers because that's the kind of money I had. I lit a woofer on fire. That was bad. Destroyed the amp, destroyed the speakers, and nearly lit my library on fire. But we don't do experiments like that anymore.
Try not to.
We try not to, but yeah.
I limit the fire as much as possible.
It's so realistic. Those Battlestar Galactica scenes where the flamethrower launches into your face. Oh, my goodness. It's just like you're there. So I've been listening while I'm talking about speakers. Kef sent me a set of their Egg wireless speakers to check out.
Egg.
I think
it's egg-shaped.
Egg-shaped. It's a thing they do. They're egg-shaped speakers. And they sound pretty fantastic, right? It's UniQ driver array, which is similar to the driver array that's in the LS50.
Right.
In their big, giant, multi-billion-dollar speakers. And they do Bluetooth. They have an onboard 96 kilohertz, 24-bit USB input, so you can basically run high-res audio from your desktop or your laptop into it.
I like that.
It's got a subwoofer out. These run, and they're pretty honest. They sound pretty fantastic, and they're pretty small. I'm still playing around with the different sort of settings on them, and I've got a shoe subwoofer that I'm hooking into them just to be completely ridiculous, because everybody should put a subwoofer that will contain approximately 8 of the speakers you're looking at inside of it for the sheer unbridled joy of it. But it's
a balanced audio setup, balanced toward bass.
Well, it's all towards, you know, it's all about, well, you laugh because
I don't laugh. I love that stuff.
I think
everyone should have multiple subwoofers, at least two.
We got an interesting email about that, we'll get into a second. But, well, it's interesting, right? Because, you know, when you go with a quality outboard subwoofer, if it's not a subwoofer that's, say, been matched to the system, right? You're going to be able to adjust the crossover. You're going to adjust the level of the subwoofer. You know, you might be able to adjust the Q of the subwoofer.
Ooh.
And yeah, things get really fancy really quickly. So it requires like putting it where you want it to be or figuring out where it should be and then making adjustments in many cases so that you manage the crossover point correctly for the speakers you have. Generally speaking, if they say the speaker is like -3 dB at like 80 hertz, then you should probably start with the subwoofer at 80 hertz. And if it sounds boomy, drop it 10. And if it sounds hollow, raise it up 10 hertz and keep experimenting until
that's
you
if you're doing a custom setup
yeah.
with, I don't know, maybe not an AVR usually. Because generally on AVRs that have any kind of automatic audio setup, you end up, you want to turn up that crossover as high as it'll go.
Yeah.
And then let the AVR detect what the crossover point is. And when that works, it's great because right. then if it's mislabeled or the thing that says 80, you know, say like an 80 hertz crossover on the knob, mm-hmm. maybe that's actually 100 or maybe that's not accurate. And then letting the hardware kind of figure itself out when it works is right. I just a great quick way to do optimize setup. Once, and then getting the volume control right,
yeah.
the volume of bass, that's always a different issue too. But again, that's another thing that I found like Odyssey setup mm-hmm. and others do provide a level where it's like, okay, right. you need it up to at least this level, and then we can go ahead and do the calibration for the sub setup. But
that's it's interesting. Is something I've been running into lately is how radically different these days setting up an AVR traditional home theater system is from setting up a classic stereo speaker amplification system. Because, you know, I was looking at my preamp and I was like, you know, there's no subwoofer out. Oh my goodness, I'm going to have to use the pass-throughs. And it's when you look at something, Kef's Egg wireless digital music system, right? You know, it was designed in the 21st century. It not only has badass speaker technology, but it is also designed to work, you know, via Bluetooth and sound. I'm kind of amazed at how good Bluetooth sounds, which I'm still getting over that. But you
well,
know.
AptX sounds really good. If those devices that support it, the receiver and whatever's providing the audio source, it's always good to check for that because I find that's such a jump up over standard Bluetooth audio streaming.
Right. Well, Bluetooth
really
4.0
helps.
Has Bluetooth 4.0. This is not your father's Bluetooth.
Good.
Right?
Yeah. Hopefully, all Bluetooth has moved out of.
Yes.
The audio pits.
Well, it's been interesting. But, you know, these Kef Eggs, right, you know, they do have a subwoofer output. But none of my preamps, of course, my audiophile preamps, I mean, you know, my vintage super simple preamps, right, those were designed to, you know, you were going to hook those into full range speakers or you were going to do the, you know, the pass-through filter on the subwoofer. And it's kind of like, oh, yeah, that's why they still have pass-through filters on subwoofers, because
yep.
a lot of equipment doesn't actually have a subwoofer out, unless you're doing an AVR, in which case they all have subwoofer outputs. And as Robert was quick to point out.
My sheltered life with AVRs.
It's okay to be sheltered because, well, it's also amazing how good, you know, a $500, a $300 amps can sound.
It can do
can
a
sound.
Lot for you
yeah.
nowadays, especially the network connected tuners if you're into streaming audio or mm-hmm. things like that, or even just pulling audio off of your mobile device.
Yeah.
Or in my case, it's also the built-in app that communicates over Wi-Fi mm-hmm. to control the receiver. I find that, at least in the case of Yamaha, they have an awesome app mm-hmm. that really makes it nice. If you have maybe a touch tablet control interface for
right.
your home, or just keep it on your phone, whip that out, and you have usually more control or simplified control compared to a lot
right.
of the interfaces you'll see on the front of an AVR. Although nowadays, a lot of them have graphic interfaces where you turn the TV on, and you get a better interface that way. But an app for a black box is always kind of nice because then it
yeah.
gives you the phone's interface to deal with the internal settings. And gotta love it, man. I really
oh,
do.
Oh, my goodness. It's been interesting spending a lot of time both on Spotify, discovering new music, and then I'm going through one of my periodic episodes of re-ripping the CD collection due to a hard drive transfer failure,
oh.
I'll affectionately call it. It's okay. You know, I thought something was somewhere it wasn't, so now I'm like, this is the reason why I have a PC with, you know, 6 CD drives inside of it. But the you know, in about 10 hours you can rip through 900 CDs if you're well about 12. No, but it's interesting, right? Because you know, AptX, you know, wireless audio, the fact that like those KEF speakers, those eggs have an onboard DAC you can feed from your computer. It's interesting to look at, because at one hand, right, the amps you mentioned before, the Amp Camp amps, they're like 8 watts each. You know, that KEF system has 50 watts, you know, for a fairly tiny driver. You know, this is like a 19 millimeter tweeter and a 4.25 inch aluminum, you know, driver covering the lower frequencies, and it's running from like 80 hertz to like 45,000 hertz. It's still audible below 80 hertz, but I think they do it at -3 at like 80 hertz. But
that's not bad.
Not bad at all, actually.
Reasons to consider subwoofers.
Yeah, I love subwoofers. The more time I spend with subwoofers, the more I love subwoofers. But
no little speaker goes way low. It's just not. The physics. It's the physics, people.
Oh, my goodness. But to go back to your earlier questions, Bowers & Wilkins still manufactures a 600 series speaker.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It looks, you know, it looks like the Svelte, more Teutonic cousin of the speaker that's sitting on the table next to us right now.
Been massaged a little bit.
Yeah. You know, and they're pretty badass speakers. I don't know. It's a good time to be buying speakers. There's inexpensive speakers that sound fantastic. There's expensive speakers that sound fantastic. There's American manufactured speakers that are supposed to sound fantastic. And someday I'll find some place where I can listen to it. I haven't listened to Magna Planers in a long time, and I've never heard Zoo Audio, which operates out of Utah, that are supposed to be pretty fantastic.
Oh, cool.
And I'm curious about them because, you know, with 8 watts, looking at a 95 dB efficient speaker, or I should say 95 dB speaker, is really tempting, because then you can basically blow your hair back or mash the
doesn't front of take a lot back. Of power when you have the efficiency up that high. Yeah. So I love that.
Oh my goodness, we have a date. We have a number of dates, a couple of dates coming up.
Okay.
Yeah, it sounds like I'm asking you out, which is just a horrifying thing.
I say yes.
You're going to your mom's house. You're going to be gone, dude.
I am. I'm on the road tomorrow morning.
Game of Thrones Season 6 Red Band trailer pretty much went up the day we recorded this episode.
Huh.
If you're a Game of Thrones fan, this is the trailer you've been waiting for. That's going to be launch April 24th. I expect my social life with my wife to completely revolve around waiting. Life is when we're watching Game of Thrones, and everything else is just waiting, right? To modify a, you know, trapeze artist quotes. And then we got a ship date for Star Wars The Force Awakens on Blu-ray, April 5th, 2016, which is my new deadline for finishing the home theater rebuild.
I always wonder why they won't wait until May the 4th and release a Star Wars movie on May the 4th.
Because May the 4th, they're going to do the 17th special edition. See, there's the Target special edition. There's the Target extra special collector's edition.
What's
only
up
available
with these marketing
after
people? Take advantage of that easy one.
Well, there's
that softball of a day.
I guess the Disney stores are going to have the lithographed.
It will be a day of celebration regardless, but
yeah, I mean, I'm just excited to get to see the movie, but it is another one of those things. Let's see Star Wars Force Awakens Blu-ray special editions.
Oh,
I should have.
At least with those movies, I don't have to wait for the unedited or the director's cut unrated version.
Well, I don't know. It's funny.
It's going to be just kind of as is. So,
well, it's. What really kind of excites me about this is, you know, I'm looking at this Blu-ray, $19.99, Amazon Prime, right?
Okay.
$20 for the Blu-ray.
All right.
$20 for the Blu-ray. Not $35.
For the UHD.
$400 for the Blu-ray. I don't see any UHD options yet.
I want the UHD
but let's
disc.
See. Where is it? I started to see, let's see, there's Target, Amazon. I thought I could have swore I saw somebody talking about the special editions.
I may have to wait for just another good box set like they did with the first six. When they have that beautiful Blu-ray box set that just...
What you're really waiting for, admitted, is for them to release the original version that technically doesn't exist anymore.
We've covered that. I fixed that problem. Go back a couple episodes.
Disney Store exclusive Star Wars The Fourth Awakened Blu-ray lithograph set.
Yeah.
There it is.
None of that.
The Force.net has the different store exclusives, the retail exclusives. Target The combo pack comes with exclusive packaging, and here's where I get pissed off. An added 20 minutes of bonus content, including never-before-seen interviews with Daisy Ridley and John Boyega, and a deeper look at the movie's costumes and weaponry. The Walmart Star Wars The Force Awakens Blu-ray combo pack comes with an exclusive BB-8 packaging and the Star Wars Galactic Connections trading disc. The Best Buy Star Wars The Force Awakens Blu-ray combo pack features exclusive steelbook packaging. So the only one that's like really kind of cruel is the Target version. If you want the
well, this will
content.
Just simply tell you what will be in the super whammy ultra special edition right. That will come out probably in 6 months after that, and that it is a combination of all of these so-called special versions for different retailers. Right. That is annoying, though.
Well, I guess it's not.
Everyone
too bad.
Has to have their special little flavor of Star Wars.
Their flavor.
Like, blah. Whatever.
Admit it, you're angry.
Whatevs.
Only at Target. Collectible packaging and exclusive bonus content. I don't know. I'm kind of excited.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just excited they're only charging $20 for it, which I think is just fantastic. And, you know, because they're probably going to try to figure out ways to get you to buy it 3 or 4 more times. Let me put that in my pre-order add to cart. Done.
I'm just happy House of Cards Season 4 is out.
Oh, my goodness. Did that start last weekend?
Yeah. I haven't even looked at it. So. That's a ready block of binge watching ready to go there.
Oh, so are you going to binge watch it? Are you going to binge watch on the... Well, you can't binge watch on the plane because
Streaming yet. Not on the flights I'm on. We'll see, though. What am I taking? United? Cross country? Into Samsung territory? That's going to be good, though. But yeah, a lot of content I'm getting caught up on. That's just one of many. Baseball is weeks away. Less than a week. Less than a month. Not less than a week. A couple of weeks from now.
I am so happy I no longer have to commute through the baseball traffic in San Francisco. That's all I'm going to say.
That's a tough one because you're sitting on the bridge looking at the Giant Stadium.
Or worse yet,
ballpark.
You're dealing with people trying to get to Giant Stadium. You're half in the bag already from drinking on the bus.
If I was a bird or I was a... Anyway, if I was a drone and I could just... hop over this mess.
Oh my goodness. So let's talk about since we now have an April 5th deadline for finishing the home theater rebuild in my house, right?
Cool.
Let's talk about setting up the room. I think in various places, whether on HD Nation or any of a number of other places we've talked about it, HD Nation tech thing this week in computer hardware, AVXL, you know, the basic 5.1, 7.1 speaker layout is pretty simple, right? Go to Dolby, do what they say.
Look at the map, basically.
Yeah.
A lot of it has to do with, you know, ideally, everything's equidistant from the listening position.
Right.
There's only one listening position, and all of your speakers are of similar quality.
Mm-hmm. Ideally, you have a set of matched, like, five matched speakers, right? Because a 5.1 setup is, you know, left front, right front, center front. And the two rear channels.
Yep, your rear surrounds.
And the 7.1 adds a couple extra ones in the back.
Center channels used for dialogue, mostly. Mm-hmm. That's an important one.
Yeah.
That's especially if you like watching TV or movies. It can really add. Don't leave out the 5 or that fifth speaker, basically, in a 5.1 setup.
Yeah, the center channel is critical. 7.1, it's interesting. If you've never been there, go to the Dolby surround sound speaker setup guide, and it's really simple, right? There, you know, throw a couch in front of your HD TV. You know, you want the center channel dead center. Ideally, you would want it in the middle of your screen where the people talk, but unfortunately, that's not practical for most of us. So you put it, you know, either under or over your screen or your TV screen or your projector screen.
Totally. And most speakers are mountable, too. So if you have a wall-mounted TV, you can usually get a bracket and attach a speaker to the under, like the center channel, to the underside of a TV, or mount them directly to a wall itself.
Right.
you know, you're doing new construction, your speaker options are pretty much unlimited in terms of, you know, on-wall, in-wall, however you like.
Right. You know, the left and right speaker should be between 22 degrees and 30 degrees. You know, if you have the sweet spot, the person that is dead center on the screen, ideally you want the kind of the center of the television, you know, so that you're looking when you're seated in the position in the seat, ideally like the center of the television is at the center of your face or a little bit above. You don't want it up in the ceiling if you've got like 12-foot, 15-foot ceilings, but a little bit above the center of your face is good. 22 to 30 degrees to the left, 22 to 30 degrees to the right.
You want to spread them out a little bit if you can, because that improves the field of stereo that will be your listening experience overall. If they're too close together,
right?
That's some of the problems I sometimes encounter when you have just a single sound bar underneath a TV. It's just there's not enough stereo separation to really hear it.
Right.
And if you're dealing with a smaller set, there's just only so much you can do with speakers fixed, you know, a couple feet away from each other. But when they're separates and they're in a room, leave yourself some flexibility when possible. And
I like to have about 8 feet if I can pull it off.
Nice.
Minimum.
I like that.
But the thing that always kind of, you know, that I never understood for a long time until Robert and I started going deep, deep, deep down the home theater path, and I'm sure Robert's going to laugh as soon as I say this, you know, in a 5.1 system, the rear speakers are pretty much supposed to be to your left and to your right.
Yeah.
And I always thought they were supposed to be like directly behind me. And that's what you add in 7.1. So, you know.
Exactly.
The 7.1, you've got the additional rear speakers that are actually supposed to be behind you. Not directly behind you, but like 135 to 150 degrees off axis from that center spot. You know, you can move the speakers, you can tweak. This is the mathematical ideal. Like if you go into Dolby's incredible rooms, they are all set up like this. They are all perfect, and they all have amazing speakers.
A lot of work.
Yeah.
A lot of built from the ground up to be the best audio listening experience you can have. So.
Well, and that's also, it's kind of, you know, one of the things they have this really subtle line at the bottom of the 5.1 speaker setup guide, the 7.1 speaker setup guide, the 9.1 speaker setup guide, the 9.1 adds a pair of additional left and right channels in the front. Room acoustics. You can achieve a more balanced sound by minimizing bare walls and floors, which means if you clap, and I think I just blew my eardrum out, which is a shame because a second eardrum is really good for stereo imaging.
Don't do that.
Well, but it's if you clap and you hear kind of an echo in your room, you probably have a bunch of bare walls, and bare walls are a nightmare for acoustic reproduction. Whether it's like I'm listening to John Coltrane and I want to hear the amazing jazz saxophone, or you're going, I'm listening to The Force Awakens, I want to hear the gigantic explosions and mayhem.
Blank walls do not help.
They reflect
all.
Sound. They sound.
It's going to muddy and mess the audio quality up overall. And the easiest fix for that is to put some stuff up on the walls.
Soft stuff or hard stuff? In theory, you can deflect it.
I mean, start with your artwork. Right. If you have pictures you like to hang up, things like that, break up a flat surface any way you can and then start from there. If you need to add additional treatments, so to speak, anything from a rug on the floor, to, they make specialized products as well, but there's a lot you can do just with some egg crate foam.
Right.
It really depends on the room. What is going to be acceptable for the people that have to use this room in terms of your acoustical treatment designs? But a stylish rug on one wall can change the whole acoustical signature. And
it's amazing what
a night and day difference.
You know, the curtains open versus the curtain closed can make a radical difference. If you've got a big old screen door on one side of your room, get some curtains for that. Hop on down to Walmart. Get yourself into West Elm, whatever your particular style or fashion is, or just tack a piece of cloth. I mean, the world's worst.
Frame some of those pictures and get them hung up.
but it's literally going from a flat surface to a surface with those little rectangles makes a radical difference. You can go so far down
because an echoey room is almost incorrectible. I mean, short of changing the characteristics of the room itself, you're not going to be sitting there with the equalizer and the audio setup on an AV receiver and correcting for just heinous room environments like that where it's just blank. A concrete cube's the worst. Cubes are another big deal too. If you're deciding on what room to do your audio setup in and you have a couple of different rooms to choose from, if you're fortunate enough, any room that's even close to being a square or a cube, avoid that like the plague. It just does horrible things to standing waves and reflections and anything non-square. I don't care what shape it is. Well, that could also be with a large doorway even because sound does odd things. It fills the space through doorways and everything like that. So when you're thinking about room size, if you have like a large double wide archway going into another room nearby, you might as well consider that one whole room then and do your setup thinking along those lines as well.
Yeah.
I mean, always from where you're going to be seated in terms of the audio performance and things like that.
You know, it's when you start, if you're starting to getting into acoustic recording, or if you start getting into high-end audio where they start getting really serious about room tunings, there's basically two things you can do, is diffusion and absorption. And diffusion is like hanging the art on the walls, you know, in the framed art on the walls, or putting books in your bookshelves where there's a bunch of irregular surfaces on that big flat wall that cause the sound to behave in irregular ways.
It's like shining a light at a mirror compared to, you know, a mirror with a bunch of Post-it notes all over it.
It makes a big difference.
It does.
Or a shattered mirror.
You know, you go.
Reflects things a lot differently.
Seen a few of those.
And then absorption is like the curtains, right? Where you've got something where it stops the sound from bouncing anywhere else. But
and another thing, don't take it to an extreme. You do not need a dead room, a room where anechoic chamber style, right, where, oh my God, I hear my pulse going through my the blood racing through my arteries and things like that. It doesn't have to be no reflection. It just can't be something like, you know,
right,
a room of symbols. Symbols with a C.
We could probably get into, I mean, do you want to explain what a standing wave is or why you shouldn't put a subwoofer in the corner?
Sometimes it's a good spot for it. It really depends. Sometimes. When I like a little extra bump. Sure. Standing waves, effectively, when you have a speaker placed in a room and it's emitting, say, a tone of some kind,
right,
those frequencies will fill the room, and then at nodes, basically, there are places where you have dips, you have, right, troughs in the wave, and you have peaks. And typically, when you walk around the room, you'll hear the acoustics change a little bit depending on where you're standing.
Mm-hmm.
And typically, where you have something like a dip, you're going, right, to hear a 10 dB roll off.
It'll get softer.
It'll get much softer. It will be noticeable. And if you don't change any of the speaker positions, you can then walk out of that zone, and then you should hear and be able to measure the sound going back up as well.
Right.
So ideally, you're trying to keep that node on a standing wave out of, say, the main listening position, right, and things like that. That's where I think if you do your basic setup right on most rooms,
mm-hmm,
you'll avoid that situation because, right, you've got adequate distance between the speakers. They're aimed at your head or wherever the main listening area is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some things you can do to help minimize that. In particular, subwoofer placement. It's the, right, big one. Generally, everything I've been taught says that if you can place that sub into where that dip is, into that node,
mm-hmm,
usually along a wall side or whatever, right, that's a great way to help minimize the effect of that audio being, you know, decimated a little bit in this one specific spot. And it's kind of a fun sort of, it's science slash, you know, using your senses at the same time,
right,
to really just kind of fine tune it the way you like.
Well, it's not, I mean, it is full on physics. I did not get a lot of sleep last
full
night. Can you tell?
Physics.
Well, it's right, but literally a standing wave means you've figured out the resonant frequency for the entire room.
Yep.
And mayhem is happening. So,
that's where your pink noise generator, white noise generator,
right,
can be really useful. Something that puts out a broadband noise pattern. So basically you're using all the frequency at a certain level, and it's easy to hear changes in that kind of a sound file, so to speak, more so than maybe it is listening to a music track that's changing constantly.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to have a test tone of some kind that you can just hear, and then it be something kind of static sounding, which,
right,
you know, noise sounds tend to be really good for this. And that's one ideal way to quickly check a room as well, just to walk around in it with the speakers as they're currently positioned. Because,
right,
look, if you find a problem, then, you know, first thing to try, reposition the speakers a little bit and see if it just changes everything up on you.
Man.
And likewise, then you can go further into it depending on what you need to do, either moving speakers or moving a sub to,
right,
compensate. And
I mean, if you walk into a room and you clap your hands and you hear a big echo, the room's too loud.
Yeah,
right?
Got to fix that.
So that, you know, so place your speakers, clap your hands, you know, start hanging stuff on the walls. Do some diffusion, which is the pictures on the walls, the boxes on the walls, the bookshelves, the books, some absorption, which is the curtains or the rug. You can go way down a rabbit hole if you start going into professional audio advice. There's tons.
Oh,
you know, there's an entire sub-industry of the high-end audiophile industry where they create stuff to put in corners of your rooms to absorb standing waves or to diffuse. It's amazing. It's an art. Like Robert said, it's an art. It's a science. But basically, if you clap your hands and it doesn't sound like you're in the middle of an echo or a well, you're probably 90% of the way there.
Totally. And again, if you have choices of rooms to do your audio setup in, whatever the quietest room is, mm-hmm. generally is a good choice too, because that's it'll be less disruptive to other people, mm-hmm. and for your own listening. When you're in the room, there is less distraction, and it gives you a chance to focus on more of the audio. Or you might have to turn it up not quite as high in order to hear things clearly. That even goes into other parts of the setup as well. A lot of people don't turn up the receiver loud enough, I've found. They don't mm-hmm. listen at anything close to reference audio. You did all this setup, but then you're constantly leaving the volume way low,
right?
To maybe compensate for somebody else in the house who might be asleep or something. Or that's where you want to look into maybe some presets, like right. compress the audio signal a little bit, maybe with the night mode. Whereas for daytime listening, typically you turn all that crap off, mm-hmm. and you have to turn it up pretty close to reference volume. So the voices sound normal,
right.
and those explosions that are supposed to sound loud do sound loud. And that's, if you find yourself constantly fidgeting though with the volume control throughout your favorite shows, you're either listening too low, or if you can't turn it up, yeah, go turn on some some dynamic range compression. That's
well, they often call that the night mode,
yeah,
or the midnight
totally.
Mode or
Or like I mentioned this earlier, for a sports setup, we just flipped right. it over to the 7-channel stereo mode,
mm-hmm.
and that was a nice compromise. You're not getting true surround sound anymore,
right.
but you know what? It was really audible, even if we turned the volume way down.
Yeah,
so
it's pretty cool. I mean,
but for critical listening, you got to get it up there. I'm not talking about like dangerous levels where you're going to harm your hearing, but -20 on a calibrated system is a good starting point. -10.
-10 is pretty loud on a lot of systems. So, you know, and those are, you know, before somebody rolls in and says, -10 what? Well, -10 dBs would tend to out.
Well, zero would be.
Yeah.
Zero.
But also.
Reference
I mean,
level.
But that also gets us back to, you know, -10 dB out of a 100-watt per channel amplifier is louder on a 95 dB efficient speaker than it is on an 85 dB efficient speaker.
Exactly.
But we're not going down that rat hole today. well, and it's also funny. I was amazed. I don't know if you ever saw the first place we had in Alameda, where we basically had to hang. The only place to put the screen for the projector was in front of the big arch that went between the living room and into the dining room. And this
crazy can be interesting.
It was interesting. It was amazing to me.
You could make a nice rear projection setup, maybe. Just make
goodness.
It a wall.
That would have been insane.
And stash it all inside.
Well, it was a rental.
Oh, no, never mind.
And a 100-year-old house, yeah. So I wasn't going to get too crazy.
Understood.
With it. The landlord was gracious enough to let me hang my my projector screen, you know, my automatic projector screen. But I bring that up because it was interesting to, that was the first time I had the first Denon amp I had that had Odyssey, and it was a nightmare of a room situation because it was like 20 feet wide and 10, or I should say 20 feet long and 10 feet wide with a fireplace to our right and, you know, 15 feet, like a fireplace 5 feet to our right where the couch was sitting, and the entrance hallway or the entrance like 15 feet to our left.
Well, it doesn't sound like a cube.
With a
so.
Big, no, it wasn't a cube, but there was a big empty space behind the speakers and, you know, 2/3 of the volume of the room was to our left. It's interesting because when you take the Odyssey microphone that's bundled with your AVR or whatever. A lot of the AVR manufacturers are now creating their own tuning
True.
Software. I've been pretty happy with Denon and Odyssey, so I don't feel any need to change at this point. But you put the little microphone on your seat, and it emits these bizarre tones, and it's actually measuring the delay
totally.
And the distance from the speaker. So it will compensate. If you're in a situation where like one of your channels has to be 4 feet to the right of where it should be, it will do its mightiest to attempt to compensate for
that.
Add
a few milliseconds of delay, get the levels even,
yeah.
check the wire, do a basic wiring check.
Yeah.
a lot of verification goes on with those little setup tools that are great. Remember where that tip I gave you earlier or a couple of episodes ago too? Throw that, if you have one of those, if you're fortunate enough to have an AVR with a setup mic, all of those mics include tripod mounts.
Right.
And
use the tripod.
Go sit in your seat and see where your ears actually are and match it pretty closely for the center of where your center of your head is, typically. Like my roommate, I did a nice setup on his home theater setup in the living room, mm-hmm. and it turns out that every time I go in there, he's always laying on the couch. He doesn't sit there ever. So I'm like, you know, actually, when your head's down a couple more feet, it does sound different, and you, right. you got more of the padding of the couch behind you and other things like that that affect overall tone quality. So let me make sure I actually look at the person sitting in there and trying to get him to relax a little bit. Right. It's like, how do you really sit here? Are you sitting upside down? Are you...
It's hard to have surround sound with only one ear facing the speakers.
But, that's true, too.
Well, one of the things you can do is Odyssey will allow you to use multiple microphone entries. So if you have three or four seats.
True. You know, it'll come up with
if you have a family
a
of
matrix.
Eight and you have the double-decker couch because you're a Legos fan and you love Emmett and you love double-decker couches. So we can all watch the movie, right, guys? You know, you could put the microphone in each of those seating positions, and then instead of having one perfect spot, it will sort of smear the audio goodness across a larger area.
You mentioned, too, about projection in odd situations, though. But always remember, we always talk about shooting a projector from the front, but they are designed from the get-go.
You can hang them upside down. You can hang them right side up.
You can shoot them from behind. Yeah. And so if you can do a screen, you don't have to illuminate the front of it. A lot of these screens are, especially you mentioned for audio setups, you can use something called an acoustically transparent screen. This can either be a woven material or physical holes are punched in the screen to allow sound to come through. And every manufacturer of screens has something in this category as far as something that's a little less more acoustically friendly, I should say, compared to others. So
that's the most expensive sentence of the day for me.
What? Acoustically friendly?
Yep. Sound transparency, fixed frame projection, projector screen. 16x9, they got elite screens. We got, that's only $739.59.
One nice thing about premium screens, like Stewart Film Screen in particular, down in Torrance, California, is that they actually do a punched hole pattern in their vinyl screens. And one thing that can occur with certain resolutions and certain pixel or punch hole pitches, depending on how finely the screen is actually punched, you can create moire problems,
right?
Where you end up having artifacts in the picture due to the hole punch pattern. So it's nice to have somebody actually confirm that, yes, we've checked this with projector X, Y, and Z. Or like I said, too, they make those woven textured screens that I really do like for beyond the acoustical transparency, the fact that they tend to be really good with projectors. We have plenty of light output. And you're more concerned about maybe it's too bright and hot spotting and things like that. A more diffuse screen material. So that's something else I really like. But yeah, don't ever just discount doing a rear projection setup, especially if you've got like 3 or 4 feet behind a wall and you can put that screen into the wall and then shoot it from behind. Oh, that gets everything out of the way, all protected from behind.
Carl's Shearweave acoustically transparent projector screen material for a DIY home theater screen. I can put the center channel behind up at carlofay.com.
I trust Carl.
I trust Carl too. $90 for 41x98, 106-inch diagonal screen material.
Yeah, and I will say putting anything in front of a speaker is going to alter sound quality.
No, that's a myth. Put a cow in front of your speakers.
So
all the audiophiles are doing it.
Acoustical transparency is nice to have if you're dealing with that kind of scenario.
This is exciting. I'm going to build a screen, and my wife's going to divorce my ass.
Heck yeah! No, if we're free, no. Terrible.
I'm going to be living on your couch.
There
dude.
You go.
You better talk to your roommate about that.
Man, we've got so many pets right now. It's Wild Kingdom.
Oh, man. My wife would probably send the cats with me out of spite. I like the cats. They're evil.
I got a great cat.
Oh, my goodness. You do have a great cat.
It's not mine, but it lives around me.
Does anyone really own a cat or merely?
I don't think so. Nothing owns this cat.
Oh, my goodness.
This cat rules his universe.
All cats rule their universe. Sony's 2016 TVs are out.
I just saw them popping up on the good old Amazon. I'm super stoked. I did a preview of Sony stuff a couple weeks ago, and I probably mentioned some stuff about that, but
that's Sony's, one of the edgelit backlit system.
They have a full array local dimming set that they're going to have this year. I believe it's the X940D, but the X930D is the one more people will be paying attention to because of pricing. Currently 55 and 65 inch screen sizes, currently 3,300 and 5 grand respectively. So it's still at MSRP pricing at the peak pricing. However, that demo that Sony gave was the first time they really had a chance to talk about the backlight system in the X930D. And it turned out they were waiting for patents to be finalized before they could talk about it. Right. And the cool thing about this is, and I am as skeptical about edgelit TVs as anyone, but I mean, they are definitely not my favorite thing in the world. However, what Sony's doing is they actually created a dual waveguide system, light guide. Instead of having a single plate of plastic with the light shining into the edges and that spreading the light across the surface of the screen.
Oh, wow.
And then it modulate the LEDs to create some local dimming characteristics. This particular TV actually has two separate lighting systems in it, dual plates. One plate handling, say, the top half of the screen and the other plate handling the bottom half of the screen. So they're able to direct more granularly and in an increased light output with more control using edge lit, which saves money compared to, you know, a direct lit LED backlighting system.
Okay.
But at the same point, still offering some performance enhancements, specifically offering greater light output and greater control over local dimming zones. Now, Sony won't talk about how many zones their newest edge lit systems have. I'm going to guess and say they're not very many on any edge lit TV. You can only do so much with a single light source turning on and off, or even with some control like that. But as far as LCDs go, nothing really beats the full array local dimming technology, where you have just a grid of LEDs behind. But I will say that this X930D, of the edge lit TVs I've seen in my life, that had a pretty clever light system, and it worked really well. And I think this is also going to be a good year for off-axis uniformity. LCDs, they're not going to be as good as OLEDs, but in terms of when you move to the side a little bit, how much does the picture change? Right. I am seeing general improvements across the board, though, in all the premium sets. And I probably also mentioned, too, they had that $60,000 4K laser projector that put out an ungodly amount of light. It was so nice, so beautiful. But I don't know if I mentioned it, though, but Sony had one of their brand new 30-inch Pro OLED monitors to put in front of their TVs so you had a reference device to look at. And this is a $30,000 studio monitor that 30 inches, the BVM X300, arguably the finest picture quality I've ever seen on any flat panel device. It was just at 30 grand, it had better be. But this thing would put out 1,000 nits of light like an LCD could. I haven't seen an OLED do that yet. And the saturation was in excess of DCI that they use in commercial cinema theaters. And it is approaching probably 80% of Rec 2020, over 80%.
Wow.
So that's
a lot of color.
It was incredibly colorful, but epic black level and just the picture quality was just lovely. And they even kept going, okay, you can't just sit there and stare at that. But these are the types of monitors they'll use when editing a film, when looking at the final, when grading color and things like that. They're, you know, $30,000 for a 30-inch display.
Right.
You're expecting a lot out of that, but just beyond belief.
Well, if you're wrapping up on a movie that costs $50 or $125 million to produce, or a commercial that's costing, you know, several million dollars.
And there are plenty of great pro monitor folks out there too, but that one in particular, at a Sony demo, it was pretty epic, I gotta say.
You found a new Dolby Cinema.
Holy cow! I've been saying forever, Dolby Cinema theaters, there used to be about five of them in the entire United States.
Right.
One of them in California, the only one I was aware of, was the El Capitan down in Southern California.
Right.
I just was Googling away today going, do I have to go to LA just to see a Dolby Cinema presentation, which includes typically a laser 4K projector, super bright, super contrast, High dynamic range, the whole deal.
So basically you can see what your goal is if you are trying to create the ultimate home theater. Go see
wide color
a movie
palette
in one of these theaters.
Plus Dolby's Atmos audio technology for the room. And in this case, it's a AMC movie theater. So it's one of their prime theaters.
Okay.
And here in Newark, California, up here in the Bay Area, there's a AMC New Park 12, and they have a single Dolby Cinema certified theater as part of their AMC Prime. And I'll be curious to see, too. Apparently, the prime stylings of AMC's Uber theaters is red. I mean, that's the corporate color or whatever.
Right.
So, like, the one in New York I went to, all the speaker cones were glowing red. And that was it just looked cool. It didn't affect performance, but and at least they turned that off, too, during the presentation. But still, I was like, I'm just happy to see something in Northern California I can point people toward and go, yeah, you don't have to fly to SoCal or... If you happen to be there, go to the El Capitan. It's a wonderful theater, but or New York at the Empire, AMC Empire.
Well, apparently they're gonna have the Burbank Century City New Park, and they're gonna open up one in Norwalk.
So there's a couple of them in LA. Then.
Nevada, Texas, Virginia, Washington. I presume no, not DC, Washington.
Oh yeah,
there's three in Texas, one in New York, one in New Jersey, one in Missouri.
Why does Texas have three? That must be a good...
Because Texas has the second largest chunk of the human populace in the United States after California.
Nice!
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, too.
Hey, do you see one of those listed in Canada? No.
They need it. They need the pixels.
Well...
More better pixels.
Maybe they have their own more better pixels.
But anyway, I've just... I stayed away from the movies for a decade. And then going to one of these Dolby Cinema theaters actually dragged me back in. And that includes the Primo...
They just keep dragging me back in.
The Primo seating. Especially the transducers in the seats, giant cup holders, reclining. It was actually a quite pleasant experience. And so I'm looking forward to checking this theater out. And I'll give
in case you're wondering what the transducer in the seat is, we used to refer to those as the Butt Shaker 4000.
Yeah.
Essentially the center interesting bits on a subwoofer that are bolted
to the
frame of the
chair.
Is that a company
name? Butt Shaker?
Butt Kicker, I think.
Butt Kicker. That's what it was.
a
little rumble.
Yeah, the buttkicker.com.
A little rumble in the bumble.
The Gatammer Company. There it is. Feel what you've been missing, the Butt Kicker family of products.
I'm willing to bet Monoprice has an affordable option or alternative.
I don't know if Monoprice does, but these actually, I don't remember these being that expensive.
Yeah, it's not incredibly complex technology.
Feel what you've been missing. I always thought, yeah, that's a great
one. Put one of those in the Lazy Boy. You won't regret it.
We did that once. It's essentially, you know, it's interesting. To when people are like, oh, my subwoofer has to go down to 16 hertz, which is great, but you can't really hear with your ears much below 20 hertz. So everything below that, you're actually more feeling. But the Butt Kicker, do they sell those? Oh, buy Butt Kicker. TheButtKicker.com.
Buy a Butt Kicker. Click
here. Look for the yellow Buy Butt Kicker button. Yeah, the Butt Kicker simulation kit, $150. The Drum Throne. They got one for the Drum Throne one. The gamer one. There it is. The Butt Kicker LFE kit. That's the pretty badass one.
Yes.
That's $700. But that's also, it literally shakes your couch. Like you put it under 1 foot of your couch.
Kaboom.
And you will finally feel. You know.
I felt too it wasn't a distracting, at least the implementation I had at a Dolby Cinema Theater. It wasn't completely overwhelming or anything. I didn't feel like I need to turn it down, so to speak. And I liked I liked the way it complemented the subwoofer effects, or the LFE effects. And no problem with that tech. I was a little surprised because I thought that was kind of faddish in a sense, doing transducers and seating. But after going to one of these commercial theaters that had it in every seat, I'm not saying I'm a full convert, but
so you realize somebody is gonna.
I found it pleasant.
You know, if you hit the right hertz, it will actually cause the entire human populace to defecate
simultaneously. Oh, now you're preaching South Park to me.
Low frequency effects, people.
The brown note.
For South Park. The legendary, the mythical brown note. Oh, man.
I love
South Park. References for 1,000. Oh, man. Eric writes in, hey, guys, I started listening to your podcast. By the way, if you'd like to write to us, we'll probably write back. It's ask@avxl.com, or you can tweet @Robert Heron or @Patrick Norton or @AVXL, facebook.com/AVXL. And, that's a majority. Or the Reddit. We're on Reddit. I got to spend more time on Reddit.
Do the Facebook. Do the Twitter.
Do the Twitter.
Or email.
Oh, my goodness.
Email's good.
Email's good.
Ask with it. Pictures.
Ask at avxl.com.
Pictures and links.
Just no downloadable executables. Eric writes in, hey, guys, started listening to your podcast a few weeks ago, and I hope you keep up the great work. Thank you. We're going to do our best. I'm a design engineer in the professional AV industry, and I love hearing opinions about products. I also tend to bring my work home with me in the good way and enjoy great audio and video at home. Cool. I have two things I wanted to reach out to you about. One, I was listening a few days ago when you were talking about assisted listening devices for a home user. There are a lot of companies that make decent products. I would recommend looking at the Listen Technologies LS-90 IR system. The receivers are very small, rechargeable, and work with standard headphones or T-coil hearing aids. $1,100 includes a transmitter and two receivers. They also make a Wi-Fi version that you can tie multiple sources, multiple rooms, and works with an Android or iPhone app. It is scalable from 4 to 24 stereo inputs. That's $3,000 plus, depending on the number of inputs, and comes with a Wi-Fi access point. Number two, Eric writes, due to my field and my passion for AV, if you ever need a resource, I would love to contribute to the team. Thanks again for the great podcast, and keep up the great work. Eric, you are one of a number of people who've emailed us who are in the industry in one corner or another, and we appreciate it.
Heck yeah.
And, let us know what you do, and we're here to learn. I think we've collectively learned a lot more from the audience than they've learned from us. We hope it doesn't feel that way to you, but... Man, there's a lot of you out there.
That was a good question we received, too, initially. It was an assisted listening scenario where a family member didn't have such hot hearing or through age or abuse or or I forget what exactly, but the person needed their own independent audio.
Right.
And everyone else still had to be able to listen to normal levels.
Right.
Of,
he was turning the volume up to maximum so he could hear it because he didn't want to wear his hearing aids.
So I'll check out with those Listen Technology, the LS90 IR system.
Oh, my goodness. Greg writes in. This is great because it ties into my recent audio madness. Greg writes in, hi, guys. Just finished catching up on all your episodes, and I've really been enjoying them. Thank you, Greg. In one of your recent episodes, you seemed to imply that two subs was kind of crazy. I think two subs is kind of crazy. Robert thinks two subs is kind of minimum.
It's halfway to four, where you should be.
Yes. And that's what Greg writes. Well, I read this white paper from an engineer from Harman International, their JBL, AKG, Harman Kardon, Soundcraft, etc., who decided to do the math, and it turns out that four is the mathematical ideal, but two is close enough that it makes no difference. Read the three-part paper at harman.com/innovation. Let me say that one more time. harman.com/innovation. It gets kind of technical, but it should be easy enough to follow. And Greg reveals that he does work for Harman, And he can tell us if we're ever in the Salt Lake City area, we can listen to the absolutely incredible JBL M2 Master Reference monitors. They are something you have to experience, and I fully intend to have that experience because I am long overdue. Maybe I can do the big loop.
We got contacts at all of the big guys for speakers, so and the little guys and anybody, man.
And in between,
gonna have to do a tour.
Harman's been fascinating. I did not know until recently that Harman is doing a lot of primary research, especially in the area of headphones, where they're trying to figure out what makes headphones sound good to people. And I was laughing. I told Greg, I was like, "This is great. I just bought." I bought an AES paper for like the $20 for the PDF so I could read this paper on distortion that's looking at the impact of distortion and perceived audio quality. And it's a fascinating read. It gets expensive. And what's amazing is Harman, who's doing all these primary research, is actually putting a lot of their white papers up on the website, harman.com/innovation. You know, making a good loudspeaker, imaging space and great sound in rooms, how many loudspeakers, what kind, where, direction in space, audio science and the service of art, subwoofers. There's a lot of interesting stuff in there.
I have a good link to share with you for science papers, too.
Oh, I like science papers.
I will dig that up and send it your way.
But there's so much goodness out there, and there's so much to be learned, and it all makes me so happy.
Keep an open mind. Absorb.
Greg, thank you so much.
Seriously, that's cool. Thank you, Greg.
Oh, man. Daniel has a correction for me. DFM 2005, at DFM 2005, a.k.a. Daniel says, at Patrick Norton, at AVXL. Not sure if anybody has said this yet, but Voodoo does stream HD on PC.
Good. That made no sense to me.
Well, it was up on... Apparently, I hit an old page on their website.
Oh.
They do now stream to Mac and PC in HD. My understanding is, however, the copyright holder can actually restrict that to SD if they want to.
We want you on these platforms.
These platforms.
Because we don't monitor the PC viewers.
But Daniel, thank you for the correction.
Totally.
We appreciate you taking the time to send that out. Cam says, good day, gentlemen. I'm considering replacing my main TV, and it looks like most recommendations are to go 4K, probably. But I have an Onkyo TK-SR508 AVR, which only supports HDMI 1.4. Does this mean I have to replace the Onkyo to get 4K at 60 hertz? The Onkyo has a home theater PC, PS3, Roku 2, and Chromecast connected to it. Thanks, Cam. Short answer, yes.
Yeah, but looking over the devices, except for maybe the home theater PC, none of those other devices like the PlayStation 3, the Roku 2, and the Chromecast require 4K 60.
Right.
And even the PC, honestly, can get by on like 4K 30 if you had to do 4K into the display. But you start putting 4K into a TV, though, and sometimes the everything is so freaking tiny. You might find, although I find on a 65-inch screen or larger, actually, it looks really good as a desktop. But however, you might want to go to 1080p input.
Right.
That's the beauty, at least, of the quad HD TVs, the quote-unquote 4K TVs we have today. They're exactly four times the resolution of our 1080p
right.
TVs. So that scales really nicely. So you can feed most 4K TVs a 1080p signal, and it's going to look great.
Okay.
So that'd be one option, but... Yeah.
So sit on it until it's time to upgrade.
I'm just looking over, like, what devices do you really need to... Why would you need to swap out the AVR at this point and with the hardware you're showing?
Well, I mean, he could also...
If you're buying down the road, sure, you know, get ready for it, but...
Well, if you wanted to get a Roku 4, if you wanted to get an Ultra HD Blu-ray player,
yep.
if you wanted to...
Eventually.
You know,
even that. Now, consider with, like, Samsung's Ultra HD Blu-ray player, it has a separate audio output for HDMI for just audio. That way you can run that to your current, you know, TK-SR508 and still enjoy lossless audio with decoding of all the current formats. And then you could run a cable directly to the TV mm-hmm. for, you know, full HDMI 2.0, HDCP 2.2 support. So...
You know, it's funny because you also might be able to do pass through from, say, a Roku 4 box to the TV and then back to the AVR. No, maybe.
Maybe with audio return channel, you can do it that way. That's always a possibility. And then I'm trying to think. Some TVs are restricted about what audio will go back on the return channel,
right.
but I find that's loosening up a little bit. That's something I really need to test better.
We don't run into a lot of need for audio return channel in our own personal setups.
Well, except for when you're using the apps built into the TV. That's
right.
the time I'm always using it. So, yeah. And I'm shocked at how often I have YouTube playing nowadays, queuing up a bunch of shows or clips to watch, and Netflix, and, you know, and now MLB coming up in 3 weeks.
This is great. If you go to Roku, support.roku.com, they have a whole article on how do I set up audio for home theater.
Oh, good.
Including Roku Player Plus Standard Definition TV, Roku Player Plus HDTV, Roku Player Plus HDMI AVR Plus HDTV, Roku Player Plus HDTV High Definition TV Plus HDMI ARC AVR Audio Video Receiver, Roku Player Plus HDTV Plus Non-HDMI AVR. This is awesome. They have like all of the various setups. So
nice when they make that easy for people.
Yes.
I love it. If you can't have it built in, make a good website that people can find.
That's so
go
cool.
Here. Here's how. Here's a video, just in case you don't feel like reading. Here's an audio clip, in case you don't want to watch anything.
So I guess our answer to Cam is you don't have to upgrade unless you really want to.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the only reason... 4K 60 is not the be-all end-all. I'm not even sure if there are any Blu-rays, even the UHD Blu-rays, I don't think any of them are doing 60 hertz native on the disc.
Huh.
So they're all 24 frames per second encoded on the disc, except for maybe they'll do The Hobbit in 48, that one version that I don't even care. But I hope. I got to look up what the specs are. I think the format supports up to 4K 60.
I don't
know of any title currently, unless there's like a, what do you call it, maybe like a music video or a concert footage or something that was shot at 60 hertz.
I'm just laughing because...
I'm just trying to think. I'm thinking of weird cases where it wasn't shot at 24 frames per second.
Oh,
so.
My goodness. The Hobbit movies are about 6 hours longer than they need to be.
You're now just realizing this?
No, I actually enjoyed the extended...
When I have to think about how much fluid I can intake before I go to sit down at a movie theater so I can sit there through the whole
thing. You're still angry about The Lord of the Rings. I'm angry about The Hobbit for completely different reasons.
I'm over it. I like making fun of it, though.
So. Which is those...
And of Hobbit fans.
Oh, my goodness.
May they all revolt.
At Next Chef tweets, at Robert and Patrick and AV Excel, any options for attaching old AV gear that has RF out only to my projector setup? And I thought I found something, and then At Next Chef was kind enough to point out that it's actually designed to take composite video and audio into an old television that only has an RF or an antenna input.
Right. You need something with RF out.
About the only thing you can do is to find an old VCR or that will accept an RF input.
Not pretty fixes, but...
No.
Yeah, none of these Switch products I look at, none of the TVs. Well, there's still an RF input on the back of a TV. Well, but if you're trying to... Then you could run... I'd have to find a device to test this, but most TVs have the RF input, the coaxial jack at least.
Right.
If you could get an adapter so to plug into that, and then if it's all heading into that, and you could pick it up on an analog station, I gotta look up what this device was that he was trying to connect.
Unusual video player.
Yeah.
I
say pair that with a 13-inch black and white TV that you find in a thrift store or something.
Which would be pretty awesome.
It would be kind of cool.
You can pick up a really nice Sony Trinitron CRT with
the clicker knobs where you got channels 1 through 13 at the top and then 44 or 14 through 60 or whatever on the bottom. So,
oh, my goodness.
No, that's a tough one. It would be, you know what? I hope somebody comes up with a dongle or something because there are older game consoles.
Right.
That I don't recall how the hell I would hook them up to a TV nowadays. Oh. I am very thankful for emulators that are online. Let me put it that way. So I don't have to worry about the, how am I going to get this connected and working and blah, blah, blah. Emulate it. Enjoy it.
Emulate it and enjoy it. Oh, my goodness. With that, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to wrap up this episode of AV Excel. Do us a favor. Email us, ask@avxl.com. If you're curious about something, ask. We'll do our best to answer your questions. If you're excited about something, tell us about it. We'll share it with the whole audience. We love your tips. We love your tricks. We want to thank you for listening. And do us a favor, if you're enjoying the podcast and you'd like to see us eventually move towards video, well, basically, we're going to make you pay.
Think about it, people.
Yeah.
Please consider
it. Patreon.com/AVXL is the place to keep this show going. Your contributions make this show possible. And we want to thank you all for being here. I'm Patrick Norton.
Hey, and I'm Robert Herron.
We'll see you next week on AVXL.
Yeah.